welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark LeVonier. Drama in this hour. Later on, it's the Hallmark Playhouse from 1951. But first, a special broadcast produced by the American Committee of Restitution and Righting Old Wrongs Incorporated, or ARRO. It's a show called They Met the Boat, starring Gary Cooper, Linda Darnell, and Will Rogers Jr., heard on ABC on October 9th, 1949.
In just a moment, you will hear Gary Cooper and Linda Darnell in a special program. Starring Gary Cooper and Linda Darnell, the American Broadcasting Company and ARRO, the Nationwide Committee for American Restitution and Righting of Old Wrongs, present a special transcribed Columbus Day program written and produced by Arnold Marquis. They Met the Boat.
That Christopher Columbus in person is registered at the Savoy Hotel here in New York, dressed exactly as he was when he stepped ashore on October 12, 1492, and claimed the New World in the names of Ferdinand and Isabella. Columbus is at this moment besieged in his hotel suite by reporters, cameramen, agents, and promoters.
Just a minute, you have my... Hold it, Mr. Columbus. Just one more picture. That's it.
Mr. Columbus, can I have your autograph?
Gentlemen, please. Rodrigo, get them off me.
Yes, my admiral. Now, please, gentlemen, Mr. Columbus is tired, and you simply must...
Mr. Columbus, if you'll appear on my television program, I can...
You've got to listen, Mr. Columbus. It's a picture contract. 2 years without...
I guarantee 5 weeks at the last frontier in Vegas.
Gentlemen, that... please, Mr. Columbus is
Mr.
tired.
Mr. Columbus, all you have to do is sign a testimonial for our company.
Stop it. I've had enough. Rodrigo, clear the room.
Yes, sir. Gentlemen, you heard what the admiral said. You'll have to leave at once. All of you, get out.
But Gary, just...
Out, and all of you, clean the room.
That's a fine way to treat the press. Who does he think he is, Leif Erikson?
There.
Get out, Rodrigo.
Huh? Me too?
Yes, you too.
Oh, very well. I just thought that as long as...
Who could have imagined this?
Hello, Mr. Columbus.
Hey? Where were you? You'll have to leave.
I thought you might like to renew an old acquaintance.
Acquaintance?
You remember me?
What is your name?
Oh, it might be Running Horse or Speaking Eagle or Spotted Wolf.
You're an Indian.
Yes, I'm an Indian. Remember me now?
No.
We met the boat.
What boat?
Your boat. When you discovered our continent.
That was more than 450 years ago.
Yes. Your coming was important to all of us Indians. Taanos, Chickasaws, Choctaws, Iroquois, Nez Perce, and Navajos, Blackfeet, and Delawares, all 300 tribes of us.
Oh, you're speaking of the natives.
The natives, yes. We stood on the shore and watched your three ships come over the horizon. We watched your ships drop anchor and lower boats into the water. And when we saw your boat coming toward us, we ran and hid.
Look at them. Their skin is white.
Yes, and their bodies are covered. Only their faces and their hands are not covered.
They are beautiful. They must have come from heaven.
Yes, they must have come from heaven.
Then we must honor them and bring them gifts.
Wait. Look. They are kneeling down on the shore.
That shaft with the beautiful cloth on it. That head man is plunging it into the ground.
They are so quiet. So peaceful. They must be from heaven.
We watched you from our hiding place, Mr. Columbus. We heard your prayers and saw your tears of joy. We saw you rise and heard your words.
In the presence of Rodrigo de Escobedo, Secretary of the Armada, and Rodrigo Sanchez of Segovia, I name this land San Salvador and take possession of it in the names of our Catholic sovereigns, Isabella and Ferdinand of Castile and León.
We didn't realize what those words would mean to us.
You heard me say these words?
Yes. Then we ran back and brought gifts out to you, remember?
I remember I ordered my men to give the natives the red caps and glass beads we had brought along for the purpose.
Like these?
Where did you get... They're exactly the same.
Yes, they are the same. Here, they are yours.
What use are a red cap and glass beads to me?
The same use as to us.
They were only tokens.
Yes. We were so happy with the red caps and beads that we painted our faces and our bodies with yellow and red and white. We brought parrots and corn and cotton thread and tobacco leaves out to your boats. And we gave these gifts to your people. They gave us broken bits of crockery and bits of green glass in return. And these we prized very highly. Until we learned their worth. At that time, we were delighted, but you were disappointed.
They brought no gold, Rodrigo.
None, my admiral.
I should have thought they would at least be wearing armlets and anklets of gold.
I have seen little gold so far. Only gugaos and those worthless things they call corn and cotton and tobacco.
If we are to impress the royal court on our return, Rodrigo, we must bring back gold.
If they have it, we will find it.
And Rodrigo.
Yes, my admiral?
You will hold these 6 natives prisoner. We will take them back to the royal court with us.
As you say, my admiral. Tomas! Tomas, seize all the savages. Take them below. Take them below.
I was one of those 6 Indians, Mr. Columbus.
You?
Your men went ashore and captured 7 of our women and 3 boys. And when they took them aboard your ships, their husbands and fathers came out to your boats and pleaded to be taken, too.
Yes.
And when you sailed, you also took with you corn from our fields and sweet potatoes and tobacco and beans and cotton, the first you had ever seen, and samples of many other things.
You were treated well?
Yes. When we were brought into the royal court in Barcelona, we saw you seated there beside Isabella and Ferdinand, with all the cavaliers in their rich clothes standing around.
Look at those savages with those coronets of feathers on their painted faces.
Yes, but look at those bracelets of gold covering their arms.
Yes, gold.
Your savages are most impressive, my admiral.
Through your grace and largesse, your majesty.
What are those brilliant and strange birds they carry in those cages?
Those are parrots, your majesty. They have many of them.
Uh-huh. And those beautiful ornaments they wear.
The savages are most skilled and deft, your majesty.
What are those little white sticks in their belts?
They are polished fish bones, your majesty.
Polished fish bones? Ah, they are fashioned with admirable art.
And notice, your majesty, their bracelets of gold.
They are gold?
Pure gold, your majesty.
Well, this enhances the value of your discovery, my admiral. We must start planning your next expedition at once.
Within 2 years, new sounds were common on our shores. We learned whenever we heard this sound, it meant suffering or death. And my people who had welcomed you with gifts talked like this.
I will grow no more food for them. I will run away to the mountains and starve to death, if only I can bring famine upon them.
And I will pay no more tribute. I have brought them a Flemish hawk's bell filled with gold every 3 months as they demanded. But I will bring them no more gold. Never.
You're right.
Come along with me, Mr. Columbus. I want you to meet some people. This is the office of a statistician, Mr. Columbus. Statistics are very important today. There are statistics on death rates, on purchasing power, on rates of growth, on merchandising, on who listens to radio, on who looks at television. Here's the statistician. Mr. Statistician, this is Mr. Columbus.
Mr. Statistician.
Mr. Columbus is the man who discovered America.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. How interesting. What can I do for you?
How many Indians were there in America on the day Mr. Columbus first landed?
Well, let's see. Have it here in a moment for you. Here we are. Based upon surveys of usually reliable sources, there were approximately 800,000.
And how many Indians were there left when the shooting stopped?
One moment, please. Here we are. There were only 250,000 left at the close of the Indian Wars. about 1890.
Yes.
So about 550,000 Indians were erased between the time Mr. Columbus landed here in 1492 and the end of the Indian Wars. Of course, if there had been telephones at that time...
Yes, well, thank you, Mr. Statistician.
Anytime. Nice meeting you, Mr. Columbus.
Thank you. So you can see, Mr. Columbus, a lot happened to us after your time. Settlements and villages sprang up all along the eastern seaboard. They grew into towns and cities.
Yes, I must say, I was very much impressed with what I could see from my hotel window. The bellboy pointed out the Empire State Building, the Chrysler Building, and Radio City. And, of course, the Hudson River and the Statue of Liberty.
Yes, well, as those settlements grew, we Indians, Mohawks, Iroquois, Chickasaw, Wyandots, Ottawas, and all the rest of us began to feel the pressure.
How are we going to settle this land with the Indians threatening us every move we make?
And around our council fires, the thing we talked about most was the problem of the whites. The white tide, as my people called it.
The whites say we must move again.
Why should we move? These hills and this valley have been our hunting ground since the Great Spirit created us.
Yes, and our crops are planted here, and the bones of our fathers are buried here.
The whites have come with another treaty.
Another treaty? What happened to the last treaty?
Yes, the last treaty said if we move to this part of the valley, we will not be disturbed again.
More whites are coming.
I will not move.
And I will not move. I will fight.
This is what happened to the Cherokees, the Apaches, the Sioux, the Navajo, and many other tribes. The same thing happened to the Delawares. The Delawares lived in the Delaware Valley of eastern Pennsylvania about 1720.
The Delawares were hunters, and they raised corn and vegetables, and they...
Oh, I didn't notice you here, Mr. Historian.
I'm always around.
This is Mr. Christopher Columbus, the man who discovered America.
It's a pleasure, Mr. Columbus. I've heard a lot about you.
Thank you.
About the Delawares, Mr. Historian.
Oh, yes. The Delawares lived near the eastern shore of our continent, in the Delaware River Basin. They numbered about 10,000 at the time William Penn, the Quaker, made his treaties with them in 1682.
Thank you, Mr. Historian.
I have a good deal of information about you, too, Mr. Columbus. And, of course, some questions I'd like to ask.
Of course.
Well, some other time. Thank you, Mr. Historian.
Certainly. Well, this has been quite an experience.
More and more whites coming to our shores, the Delawares had to give way, move slowly westward.
Once we had given up our lands in the Delaware Valley, we could establish no valid claim anywhere.
This is a Delaware chief, Mr. Columbus.
Yes. Wherever we went, we trespassed on the lands of others. Once our lands were gone, every man's hand was against us.
From what was eastern Pennsylvania, they moved to western Pennsylvania. And from there, through the wilderness which became Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, another 20 years, and they were forced to move again. My people learned that the Indian Removal Act had been passed in Congress.
What does this mean?
It means that the great white chief now can move us even farther, even across the great river.
And soon the Delawares were asked to cede their lands in Ohio and Michigan and Indiana, to move to the west side of the Mississippi.
They have no right to move the Indians out of their own land.
This is Congress in 1834, Mr. Columbus.
And therefore, under the Indian Removal Act, all that part of the United States west of the Mississippi will be deemed to be Indian country.
All that part of the United States west of the Mississippi will be deemed to be Indian country. That, at least, was what the Indians were promised. And so it was decided to furnish them horses and boats for transport, with provisions to sustain them on the way. This is a road westward toward the Mississippi. Sorry about the rain and the cold, Mr. Columbus.
Miserable weather.
Yes, bad weather to be moving.
Wretched. Those are Indians in those wagons?
Yes. They don't like it either.
Don't seem to mind it much. Look at those on horseback.
They're huddling against it as best they can.
Yes, I see they're shivering.
These Indians are scattered all along this road for 75 or 80 miles.
Bad road, too.
Yes. Here, we'll stop this wagon. Talk with them. Oh, there. Oh.
Oh, he sees you. He's stopping.
Come along, Mr. Columbus. Are you heading for the Mississippi?
Yes, for the Mississippi.
Are you Chief William Anderson?
Yes.
Got your whole family in the wagon, I see.
Yes.
And all your tools and things?
Everything. Saws, chisels, axes, hammers, Old shovel.
Old?
Yes. Sweet corn and peas. And peach stones and seeds to plant. But no blanket.
No blanket?
Promised blankets. But we get no blankets. Must go.
Good luck.
That road and many others like it led to the Mississippi. And the river towns were busy places. Places like Kaskaskia, Illinois, where there was a ferry. The Indian sub-agent at Kaskaskia was a Frenchman named Pierre Menard.
But what is this? With all these Indians coming through here, I have seen many strange costumes, but none like yours. Je vous prie, monsieur, is it that you are one actor?
I am not an actor.
This is Mr. Christopher Columbus, the man who discovered America.
Oh. Aha. Oui. Oui. Of course. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mr. Menard, are you kept busy here?
Busy? Mon Dieu. Voila. There is one ferry boat load of Indians going across. This is just one load. It goes like this each day, day after day.
Have you any idea how many Indians you've moved across the river?
Precisement. Un moment. I have paid ferriage across the river for one party of 70 Indian families and their 75 horses. I have paid ferriage across the river for another 41 Indian families and their 56 horses.
I see.
In November last month, I paid for ferrying 1,346 Delawares and their 1,499 horses across the Mississippi. And for these Indians, I bought 17,600 pounds of flour, 22,000 pounds of beef, 462 bushels of corn, 700 bushels of salt, 672 pounds of powder, 288 pounds of lead, 1,700 flints.
Will they be needing all this on the other side of the river?
Need it? Where they are going, they will need everything. They do not know where they are going. We do not know. For this reason, we have repaired their rifles. But one thing we cannot do for them. We cannot protect them against the whites who steal their horses.
The whites steal their horses?
The whites have stolen so many of their horses that the Indians have not been able to shoot the game to feed their families. It is very bad. Maintenant, pardonne-moi, s'il vous plaît.
Crossings like this one at Kaskaskia were made many places on the Mississippi by the Delaware, the Cherokees, Choctaws, Chickasaws, Creeks, Seminoles, Kickapoos, Wyandots, Ottawas, Pottawatomies, Winnebagos, Sacs, Peorias, Miamis. All went to the land beyond the Mississippi. This is Memphis in the middle of the winter, Mr. Columbus.
Oh, this cold. It is almost more than I can stand.
We will be here just a minute.
The snow is frozen hard on the ground. And look, the cakes of ice drifting there in the river. Oh.
Mm-hmm. But you see, the Indians are crossing it in their boats just the same.
Yes. But where are their tents? Where are their wagons? They have nothing but those firearms.
They have nothing else.
What is in those bundles they carry?
Food.
Are these Delawares, too?
These are Choctaws. This happened to nearly all of my people.
They don't utter a sound as they get into the boat. Not a cry, not a sob.
No. They have their aged and their sick and their children with them.
Look, their dogs are trying to get into the boat with them. But that officer in charge is keeping them out.
Yes.
All right, come off! Come off!
There they go.
Look, the dogs just realized that they're being left behind. There they go. And the dogs have plunged into that icy water and are swimming after the boat.
So the Indians crossed the Mississippi, straggled across it for several years, and settled in the wilderness beyond. They planted crops, they hunted. But after 4 or 5 years, they were hungry. Mr. Columbus, here is the head chief of the Delawares.
Oh, yes.
Chief Anderson here was the man we talked to on the road in the rainstorm.
The one in the wagon. Yes, I remember.
Chief Anderson, you wrote a famous letter to General Clark.
The letter Black Beaver and Nat Combing wrote with me?
Yes. What did you say in it?
The exact words?
The exact words.
White Father, last summer a number of our people died just for the want of something to live on. We have got in a country where we do not find all as stated to us. White Father, We did not think that big man would tell us things that was not true. We have found a poor, stony country, and the worst of all, no game to be found on it. Last summer, the rain destroyed our corn, beans, pumpkins. White Father, you know it is hard to be hungry. White Father, we are obliged to call on you once more for help in the name of God.
Many people sympathized with the Delawares and the other eastern tribes, and they sent petitions to Congress, urging regard for the rights of the Indians. Come along, Mr. Columbus. Let's listen in on the Congress that was then in session.
By immemorial possession, as the original tenants of the soil, the Indians hold a title beyond and superior to ours. God, in his providence, planted these tribes on this continent before we had a political existence. I believe, sir,
that's Senator Frelinghuysen of New Jersey speaking. He's been speaking for 2 days against the removal of the eastern tribes of Indians.
With this conceded, I ask in what code in the laws of nations, or by what process of deduction, their rights have been extinguished? Is it one of the prerogatives of the white man that he may disregard the dictates of moral principles when an Indian shall be concerned? It seems to me that every thinking man...
There have been many like Senator Frelinghuysen since you discovered this continent, Mr. Columbus, but the Delawares were moved again. This time, to a location southwest of Kickapoo Reservation. Step over here with me, Mr. Columbus. Here comes a party of Delawares, right through the pass.
Well, what are they carrying?
They're returning from a hunting expedition. These Delawares range as far west as the Rockies in search of beaver.
They have their women with them, too, I see.
Yes.
What's that?
White renegades. Get behind the boulder, Mr. Columbus. They're holding up the Indians.
Whites holding up Indians?
Yes. Robbing them.
Oh, why, they've killed one of the Indians. And they're looting the others.
Yes.
They're driving off the Indians' horses. Isn't anything done about this?
If the white renegades are caught, yes. But they were not often caught. The Delawares settled in Kansas, which had been designated as Indian country. This is the Kansas border in 1854, Mr. Columbus.
Whoa there.
Whoa. Howdy. Whoa. Getting all ready to move into Kansas, eh?
Yep. All loaded up, ready to move in.
Expecting any trouble with the Indians?
Trouble? What right have they got here? Kansas-Nebraska bills open up this territory to white settlement, ain't it?
That's what I say.
Ain't no Indian gonna stop me. Come on, get up there.
So the Delawares were forced to cede all their land in Kansas, except a small, diminished reserve. An Indian went up to an army captain.
My brother, to whom does this land belong? I believe it belongs to me. Look at me and at the ground. Which do you think is the oldest? The ground. And on it, I was born.
Did you Indians always resist the whites?
Let's ask the statistician about that.
Most assuredly not. They have fought on our side in every war we ever fought to defend America.
Were they rewarded for this service?
Well, that is a question for the historian.
Mr. Historian.
No, they were not. A year after the Civil War, the Delawares were removed to Indian Territory, now Oklahoma. In the 150 years from the time that they were first moved off their native lands in eastern Pennsylvania, they were moved 7 times, each time to a different wilderness environment. From their beautiful Delaware Valley, through the deciduous forest of Ohio, to the wooded Ozarks, and at last into the grassy plains of the Buffalo Country. They were confronted with 45 treaties, an average of 1 every 3 years. Of the original 10,000, there were less than 1/6 of this number when they reached Indian Territory. Today, only a handful of Delawares remain. Any questions?
Today, the remnants of the Delaware and of all the other Indian tribes that were here when you landed are scattered over the country in 300 reservations. The first sound of your firearms when we met your boat, Mr. Columbus, echoed and re-echoed over our lands, reverberating through our hills and canyons and forests, and over our prairies and plains.
It reached its climax in our great West 70 years ago. And when the echo of the last shot had died, the Delawares, the Iroquois, the Cherokees, the Sacs, the Fox, the Blackfeet, the Sioux, the Crows, and the Creeks, and the Arapahoes, the Wyandots, the Pueblos, the Hopis, and the Navajos, all 300 tribes of us were still. Our lands were gone. Our freedom was gone.
Your lands, your freedom.
This is why your anniversary is important to us, Mr. Columbus.
But I could not have dreamed.
We are in your debt, Mr. Columbus, for your anniversary has become our anniversary. And all people shall remember October 12th, 1492, as the day America discovered her Indians. For America's greatness lies not only in what was brought here, but also in what was found here.
Columbus? Are you here, Mr. Columbus? Not a sign of anybody here. Well. Mabel, give me the manager's office. Yeah. I can't figure it. A man like him. This is a bellboy, 316. Yeah. Mr. Columbus ain't here. No, he's gone. Yeah, baggage and all. Well, the only thing left is right here on the table in front of me. A red cap and a handful of glass beads.
Just heard Gary Cooper as the American Indian and Linda Darnell as Queen Isabella in a special transcribed program on American Indians, They Met the Boat, written and produced by Arnold Marquis, a presentation of the American Broadcasting Company and Arrow, the nationwide committee for American restitution and righting of old wrongs.
And now, Will Rogers, Jr. Thank you. As you know, the American Indian has long been in a desperate plight. To come to his help, we have organized a nationwide citizens committee called the Arrow Committee, and we invite all Americans to join this Arrow Committee. Now, such a nationwide effort to help the American Indians has long been needed, and I'm only sorry that a committee like Arrow was not started years ago. But now we are started and underway, and we need money, desperately need money. We need your contributions so we can at last rehabilitate the American Indians. Please send your contributions to Arrow, Phoenix, Arizona. That's Arrow, Phoenix, Arizona. Join our American Indian effort and help us right an old wrong.
They Met the Boat, on Tuned to Yesterday, a one-off show for ABC, heard on October 9th, 1949. This is an hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now the Hallmark Playhouse delivers the program called Night of the Hayride with film actress Loretta Young, who in the same year of this broadcast was starring in two motion pictures, one called Cause for Alarm, the other called Half Angel, alongside Mercury Theater player Joseph Cotton and Jim Backus. This episode first heard on CBS on the 1st of December, 1951.
Tonight from Hollywood, the makers of Hallmark greeting cards bring you Loretta Young in The Night of the Hayride on the Hallmark Playhouse. Hallmark brings you Hollywood's greatest stars in outstanding stories chosen by one of the world's best-known authors, the distinguished novelist, Mr. James Hilton.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is James Hilton. Tonight on our Hallmark Playhouse, we dramatize a story by Marcella Tallant, called The Night of the Hayride. Occasionally it happens that a single chance event can pull the switch, as it were, that sends the rest of a person's life in an entirely new direction. In Miss Tallant's story, this happened to her heroine, and the cause of it all was just a matter of inches and seconds on a country road at night. The difference between safety and disaster as it first appeared, but later, the difference between a lonely, idle, selfish life and its exact opposite. To play our heroine's part tonight, we are fortunate indeed to have with us one of Hollywood's most famous actresses, Loretta Young. Was big enough to be called a mansion, and indeed it was so named by the people of Holbrook. Gray and silent, it stood in stately solitude, almost 8 miles beyond the town limits. Passers-by along the river road peered frequently through the high iron fence of the formal gardens within, but seldom did they glimpse the mistress of the estate, Miss Cora Holbrook, aged 37, lovely of face and lonely of spirit.
Martha. Martha.
Yes, Miss Holbrook?
Will you tell the cook, please, that dinner was very good, and to send some warm milk up to my bedroom?
You're going to bed now, ma'am?
Yes, I'm rather tired. I'll read a while in bed.
Yes, ma'am. Oh, excuse me, ma'am.
Yes?
Would it be all right if I took the evening off? I halfway promised Mr. Anderson...
You've been seeing quite a bit of him, haven't you?
Yes, ma'am. We thought tonight we'd drive down by the river. It's so warm, and there's a full harvest moon.
Martha, what do you and Mr. Anderson talk about?
Well,
Me, perhaps?
Oh, no, Miss Holbrook. I never discuss you with anybody.
Because they're not interested, I suppose. That's the way I want it, to be forgotten and to forget.
Excuse me, ma'am, but is there something wrong?
No. No, I'm just tired.
Oh, you need to get out more, ma'am. Staying indoors and just walking around the garden isn't enough.
Martha.
Well, I shouldn't speak out, ma'am, but I've known you longer than anyone, ever since you were little. I say it's wrong to cut yourself off this way. You used to be so gay and careful.
Martha.
I beg your pardon, ma'am.
You may have the evening off, Martha.
Thank you, ma'am.
See to it that you meet Mr. Anderson outside the gate.
Yes, ma'am. Good night, ma'am.
Good night, Martha. Harvest moon. Just coming up over the river. Full yellow. And a hayride. Children on a hayride. No.
Miss Holbrook, are you still downstairs?
Yes, Martha. Have you seen that book on Lord Byron that I was reading?
No, ma'am, but the front door.
I know, Martha. Will you please tell Mr. Anderson he is not to come to my front door?
Oh, he wouldn't do that, ma'am. Besides, it's too early for him. I can't imagine who...
It really doesn't matter, Martha, who it is. Send him away.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
I'm Dr. Armsby. There's been a terrible accident outside.
Oh, Miss Holmes...
You have your orders, Martha.
I'm sorry, Doctor.
You're sorry? Well, I am, too, because I'm coming in.
Oh, sir...
Miss Holbrook, I'm Dr. Armsby.
Yes? Didn't you hear my name?
I'm afraid you don't understand. There's been an accident almost at your front gate. A wagon load of children on a hayride. I was driving along behind them and saw it. A truck tried to pass and sideswiped the wagon. There are about 20 injured.
Oh. Then the telephone is in the hallway.
That can wait. First, I want hot water, soap, disinfectants, blankets, and sheets. We're bringing the injured in here.
Dr. Armsby, I'm truly sorry about the accident, but this is not a hospital.
Well, I realize that, and also that the nearest hospital is in the county seat 45 miles from here.
In that case, Doctor, the children have their homes. It's only 8 miles back to town.
Miss Holbrook, you will have to accept my word that the injured are in no condition to be moved. Now, I'll call the hospital and have them send nurses and anesthetics. Meanwhile, please tell your servants to clear your first floor rooms. Put sheets and blankets on the divans and lay out mattresses on the floors. Eat all the hot water you can and keep eating. I'm sorry to be so abrupt. I don't wish to order you about.
And I don't intend to be ordered about, but there are the children. You may bring them in, Doctor.
Put a new needle in this syringe, please.
My arm hurts. It won't move.
Oh, Doctor, I put some coffee for you on the table.
Oh, thanks, sir. By the way, what is your name?
Martha, sir.
All right, Martha. Will you start tearing up some rolls of gauze? We'll need miles of it to tie on this room.
Yes, sir. Dr. Armsby.
Yes?
I have had one of the guest rooms open for you. Whenever you wish to rest,
oh,
you
thanks,
may go.
But there'll be no time for that.
Well, in any case, good night. I'm very tired.
Oh, just a minute, Miss Holbrook. Get some hot water and gauze and wash up some of these children, will you? Try to be as gentle as possible.
Oh, but, Doctor, she's Miss Holbrook.
She has hands, hasn't she? I'm sure you understand. We need every pair of ministering hands we can get tonight.
Yes, Doctor. Yes, of course. You get well, dear. But first, clean hands and a clean face. That's half the cure, you see. There you are, Tommy. I knew there was a handsome boy underneath all that dirt. Oh, what's a broken arm? Well, I had one every single winter when I used to ice skate. All right, who's next? Now you, Helen. And Bobby. And Carol.
Miss Holbrook,
yes?
Have you a minute?
Yes?
We haven't phoned the parents yet. It's getting late, and they'll be wondering what's keeping the children. Now, I've made a list of all the families. Will you phone them and explain, give as little detail as possible, but reassure them in case they've heard rumors?
I'm sorry, Doctor, but I couldn't, possibly.
Well, why not?
Well, I'm out of touch with Holbrook people. I haven't set foot in Holbrook in 16 years.
I understand that, but I'm too busy to call everybody myself. Above all, I don't want hysterical parents rushing out here. I need every minute to try and save their children. Now, is...
Dr. Armsby, I cannot talk to them. I know what the town says about me, what they have been saying for 16 years. Doctor, I have taken too much. I owe the town nothing.
It's an impenetrable fence, isn't it?
I beg your pardon?
The fence you've built around your estate and your heart.
Doctor, I...
Wait. Perhaps you'll feel better if I cross one name off that list. Here.
Oh.
Now, will you help me? Please.
Mrs. Ryan, this is Cora Holbrook calling you. Yes, Cora Holbrook.
The hours of that night passed slowly. The harvest moon was setting in the west before Dr. Armsley fastened the last splint and checked the final bandage. The injured children slept, all save one. Cora Holbrook bent over her and placed a cool hand on the flushed cheek.
Didn't Dr. Armsby give you a sedative?
A what?
It's something to make you sleep.
Yes, but I can't.
Why?
It was all my fault.
Oh, now, you mustn't.
It was. I asked my father if we could have a hayride.
Yes.
I asked him to get the wagon for us, and I invited everybody. It was all my idea.
What's your name, dear?
Sally. Sally Reeves.
Yes. And you're 13 years old.
Oh. Did I tell you?
No. Try to go to sleep.
I don't think I can.
Perhaps if I sang to you very low, or better yet, I can play the piano.
Piano?
Yes.
It's right here behind the divan. This is my library, you see, and the rest of the children are in the other rooms. So if we're very quiet, they won't hear us.
You're not one of the nurses. You live here?
Yes, dear. I'm Miss Holbrook. Oh.
But you aren't anything like... I mean... Well, you just are.
Oh. Thank you, Sally. Thank you. Oh, doctor,
Well, don't stop.
Well, the piano is really very out of tune. It hasn't been played in years, and I...
Isn't that reason enough to play it now?
Martha?
I thought I heard somebody in the kitchen.
I'm just fixing some fresh coffee. There's no need for you to get up, Martha.
But you've got to get your rest too, ma'am. It's gone.
I know. And that's why I want you to go back to bed.
Yes, ma'am.
Martha?
Ma'am?
Martha, what happened to Dr. Thurston? Did he leave Holbrook?
Oh, he died, ma'am. Last summer.
Oh. Oh, I didn't know. And then Dr. Armsby has replaced him?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Oh, he's such a fine doctor. But there's so little he can do with the nearest hospital 45 miles away.
I suppose.
That's why he wants to build one here in Holbrook.
Martha, do you know what his wife is like?
Oh, he's not married, ma'am.
Oh? That's all, Martha.
Yes, ma'am.
I hope that's for me.
Oh.
I'm sorry. Did I startle you?
Well, I'm not used to people hovering in doorways. How long have you been there, Doctor?
Only a second. May I sit down?
Why, yes, of course.
I had to give the carter boy another transfusion. He'll be all right now.
Mm. Tired?
Dead. And you?
Dead.
That's an appropriate description for this place. How many rooms are there in this mausoleum?
There are 31, but I don't consider it a mausoleum. It's my home. I was born here, and my father and his father. No, this is my citadel, my fortress.
Mm-hmm. Against the town your great-grandfather founded, the people of Holbrook.
Then you know my story.
Well, I don't believe everything I hear.
I was in love once. Unbelievable as it may seem now, Doctor. The man is now your town banker.
Jason Reed.
Jason Reed. I was 21. The day before we were to be married, he eloped with my best friend. I went to Europe to forget. When I came home, I was greeted with pity, amusement, smug satisfaction. The town had seen a Holbrook humbled. Well, I wouldn't take it from them. Why should I? I owe the town nothing, and for 16 years, I have made myself forget its very existence.
And then last night you snapped out of it. Last night you took the children of the town into your home. You did 100 unpleasant tasks for blood-stained, frightened boys and girls. You even played a lullaby for the daughter of the man you hate.
Sally's a sweet child. Why should I take out my bitterness on her?
More important, why should you take it out on yourself? You've got good stuff in you.
Oh.
Don't hide it. You're 37, aren't you? No, don't look away.
What does my age matter? I'm old. I've let myself go. My face, my skin,
Cora,
my hair.
Cora, look at me. You're not old. And you look wonderful. Cora, the best part of your life can still be ahead.
It depends on you what you do with it. You can stay here, cut yourself off from the world, secure, forgotten, or you can return to life. You can be the best liked woman in this county.
I'm sorry, Doctor. I'm tired. I have got to get some rest.
Cora, don't run back into your citadel. Stop building fences around yourself.
It's too late, Doctor. It's too late.
Cora!
Good afternoon, Miss Holbrook.
Oh, Sally, did Dr. Amesbury say you could get dressed?
Yes. He says I'm well enough to go home now.
Oh.
Some of the others are going with me.
Oh, I see. Well, I'm very happy to have met you, Sally.
Thank you. Miss Holbrook.
Yes?
You've changed your hair, haven't you? You're much prettier than last night.
Why, Sally.
Miss Holbrook.
Yes, dear?
My father is here. He told me he'd like to see you.
I'm sorry, Sally, but I'm very busy. He'll understand. You go and tell him that...
I do. I don't blame you, Cora.
Jeez.
I never expected to see the inside of this house again. Or to see you. Time has dealt kindly with you, Cora.
Sally, you better run along, dear.
Yes, I'm...
I'm the one to be embarrassed, Cora, not you. I have much to be ashamed of and more to be grateful for. The whole town here.
The town?
Yes.
Oh?
Everybody.
Oh?
If you hadn't heard the accident last night, if you hadn't gotten here so quickly and called Dr. Armsley when you did, some of our children would have been lost.
Jason, who told you that?
Dr. Armsley.
Oh, I see.
If there's ever anything I can do for you, Cora, if any of us can ever help, you know where to come. You'll always be welcome.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you very much. Book just has to be here somewhere. Yes, yes. Yes, Doctor.
I just wanted to say goodnight, Miss Holbrook. I've looked over the remaining patients. I think they'll be all right tonight, but if anything does come up, the nurse can call me at home.
Yes, of course. Dr. Armsby, this afternoon I saw Jason Reeves.
Yes.
Yes. He and the townspeople are under the impression that I saved the children. You gave them that impression.
I did, and I hope you won't make a liar out of it.
I'm not sure why you felt impelled to make me seem better than I am.
Cora.
Nevertheless, it did open my eyes to a need. Holbrook should have a hospital.
It should.
Would you say that this house would do as a beginning, this 31-room mausoleum of mine?
Well, it would be ideal, but where would you live?
Well, I've thought that out. I can build a smaller place somewhere in a property. Now, if the plan is satisfactory with the town authorities, I'll instruct my attorneys to draw up the papers.
And then?
That's all. I just thought I should discuss it with you.
I see. Then, thank you, Miss Holbrook. Good night.
Good night. Martha?
Yes, Miss Holbrook?
Martha, I am still looking for that book. Can't you help me?
You don't really want to read, do you?
Oh, I thought you'd gone. Look, Doctor, I happen to enjoy reading in the evening.
On an evening like this? Oh, come on. I want to show you something.
No, I really don't...
Now, no arguments. Just follow me. Now, look over those trees. The harvest moon.
Yes. Just coming up over the river. Full and yellow. I stood here last night watching it. Before you came.
It's the same moon, but not the same woman. Cora, you can't fight your way back. Your gift to the town is only half a gift, because you still aren't giving yourself. Do you know what I'm trying to say?
Yes. Yes, last night, you made me forget myself. You made me help others who needed kindness and care. You made me serve others. You made me forget my self-pity. Perhaps that's the cure I should have sought long ago.
That's only part of what I meant. Cora, that little house you're going to build, it mustn't be another citadel. You can keep out the world, but you can't keep out loneliness.
Loneliness?
Believe me, I know, because I live in a little house. Oh, Cora, dear, let's end that loneliness here, now. Darling, you're crying.
Yes. Oh, yes, for the first time in 16 years. I'm a woman, and I'm a woman in love. John, take my arm. Take me down that front path. I want to unlock that gate and never, never close it again. I want to walk down the river road under that harvest moon.
Until next week, then, this is James Hilton saying good night.
The Hallmark Playhouse on Tuned to Yesterday from December 1st, 1951 on CBS. And that brings to a close this hour of drama on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. It's been a pleasure.